All right, let's do this on this Friday. Welcome into Morning Invest on this Friday, December 3rd. I'm Clayton Morris. So glad to have you here. Natalie is off. She is spending the weekend with her mom, a little R&R. So it's just the boys today. Grover, David, my producer, and myself today. We've got a jam-packed show for you. We're going to talk about the stimulus, the Build Back Better plan. It looks like we may have a date and some details about when we could actually get this thing passed. Kyrsten Sinema speaking out, Joe Manchin speaking out. There's a battle brewing in Congress right now over whether or not we're going to get this thing before Christmas or after Christmas. We'll also talk about the government shutdown, which was narrowly averted last night. And we're going to look at China. Interesting story out of China as it relates to one of the top tennis stars in the world and what the business climate is like around China right now. Like, will you stand up and support women's rights? Will you stand up and say no to sexual abuse? Or are you just going to stand up for your own bottom line profits? So we'll see what Wall Street and some of these big companies are doing. And the World Tennis League, the World Tennis Association today, I'm really, really excited about this story because they stood up, and we'll talk about that. And we've also going to be talking about the lockdowns, a whole rash of new lockdowns coming in the past 48 hours and more on the way. And just a new report showing how soul-crushing these lockdowns are, specifically for the poor and middle class, and how the rich just do fine. They've piling up, stockpiling of money, but these lockdowns, just soul crushing. And we know that they didn't work. So why are we doing them again? All of that and more on this show on Friday. Let's get uncomfortable on this Friday. Roll it, Steve. All right. All right. So there you go. Yeah, it's lonely here without the other. Here's the empty seat. Here's Natalie's empty seat over here. It's kind of sad. Kind of sad and lonely. All right, you guys ready to talk about the stimulus today? Shall we talk about the Build Back Better in a moment? We'll get to that. But I first want to talk about what happened last night. So around 9:30 last night, the Senate narrowly approved a stopgap spending bill to keep the government open for another few months. So instead of solving the debt ceiling problem, what did they do? They just kicked the can down the street once again. They kicked it into February. February 18th. So they get to go home for Christmas and enjoy themselves. And the vote was pretty strong, actually. A number of Republicans signed on with Democrats to keep the government open and avoid this shutdown. The Senate also rejected the Republican amendment that would have barred private sector vaccine mandates. So Republicans tried to add that in at the last minute. Mitch McConnell basically said, no, don't do that. That's not a reason for us to shut down the government. So there maybe some cooler heads prevailed in this, that they didn't try to shove this thing together with the government, keeping the government open. Nevertheless, the funding bill is now going to head to President Biden's desk, where he's expected to sign it ahead of the deadline tonight. So he has to sign that tonight so that we don't shut down. Now let's turn our attention to the stimulus and what's happening on the Build Back Better plan. Big news today on the date where we could see a vote for the Build Back Better plan. Kyrsten Sinema has been, according to Punchbowl News, has been telling colleagues that she doesn't believe that we're going to see a vote before Christmas. Now, this is a huge problem because if you've been following along, you know that Senator Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, has been saying that he wanted to have a vote by December 13th. And I'm no math genius, but how many days is that? Can anyone in the chat, David, you know how many days? What does it say? The third, right?
Yep, so today's the third.
So that means what, 9 into 10 days, right? Like, that's what we're looking at? So that's about how much time that Senator Schumer thought he was going to need in order to get this Build Back Better stimulus plan through Congress. But that seems highly unlikely. I mean, we were talking here on the show the other day. There's no way they're going to hit this timeline, right? They're going to have these things in committee. They're going to be back and forth making a decision on these things, scratching things out, adding things in. There's absolutely no way that they're going to be able to get to this before Christmas time. That was what we were thinking. But now Kyrsten Sinema coming out, and she sort of skirted the question. She's been labeled a bit of an enigma, right? And she had an interview last night for the first time in a while. And actually,
that's not a word I'd use.
What's that? Enigma?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've criticized Kyrsten Sinema, the senator from Arizona, on this show at length for taking gobs of money from the pharmaceutical industry. She is exactly what is wrong with Washington. She's exactly what is wrong with Congress. She is seems like she's only there to serve the lobbyists and not the people of Arizona. I mean, it's not sticking up for lowering prescription drug prices. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So she was asked in this interview, you know, are you an enigma and are you planning to vote for the Build Back Better plan? Here was her response.
Schumer has said he wants to vote on Build Back Better, that broader social safety net bill, before Christmas break. Are you prepared to vote yes when that comes to the floor?
Well, I don't set the schedule for the Senate floor, and I'm always prepared to vote and to vote for what's right for the interests of Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
I personally believe that.
And curtsy and thumb down.
Right. I'm always looking to make sure that the people of Arizona are taken care of. That's my...
I'm always ready to walk in with my Gucci bag and do a curtsy and thumb it down.
And give a thumbs down. Bye-bye. If you don't know what David's talking about, yes, when she voted against raising the minimum wage, she walks in with her Gucci bag to the Senate floor, does a little curtsy, and when they asked her for her vote, she said, mm-mm, and just walked out with her Gucci bag. No $15 an hour minimum wage. I really care about the people of Arizona.
Great legislation is to be thoughtful and careful so that we're crafting legislation that truly represents the interests that we want to achieve and that creates a benefit and helps people all across Arizona and the country.
Oh,
so that's what I'm working on right now.
So it doesn't sound like you're quite a yes yet on the version that just passed the House of Representatives. What changes do you want to make?
Well, folks know I don't negotiate in the press, so I'm not going to do that with you.
I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you anything. Folks know I don't negotiate in the press.
No.
I know one of the things that you made clear very early in the negotiation with the president and your majority leader was that you were not going to support raising the corporate tax rate up a single point. Did you feel like at any point they weren't taking your comments seriously, given the fact that they were promising for a long time that this was going to be part of the bill?
You know, I don't really spend much time thinking about what other people are saying publicly. What I really want to focus on is how to get to a solution and solve a problem that matters to everyday folks in Arizona.
So just a big word salad. So what did you actually just say here, Kirsten? Do you support this bill? I'm not going to answer you. Do you plan to vote on this before Christmas? I'm not going to answer you. I don't make the schedule. I just care about Arizona. That's it. Just a big word salad. I mean, she's like the perfect politician, isn't she? I mean, if you had to look up politician in the dictionary, like just put her face there right next to Joe Manchin. Because that's another big story this morning on Joe Manchin and the two of the most critical votes right now on this stimulus, on the Build Back Better stimulus. Manchin now publicly saying he thinks that a vote may have to wait until 2022, after Christmas, through the new year. No rush. No rush for the American people. No rush for making sure that families get earned income tax credits, child tax credits, prescription drugs, hearing coverage, vision coverage, all of that covered under Medicare. No, you guys can wait on that. Man, America is just going down and going down fast. Like you're watching it before your eyes. It's just imploding. And these politicians are making no excuses about it. I mean, they are literally standing there in front of us, taking this money from these lobbyists.
Which what people don't understand, okay? Well, listen, they're taking money from lobbyists, which is actually our money, because we buy goods and services to give these corporations all this money. So it's like we are the ones funding this whole, we are funding the destruction of this country. Because
yeah.
We go buy things at Amazon. Amazon takes that money, gives it to Congress and senators, and then they send it over to Jeff Bezos for a $10 billion write-off on his rocket. Comcast lobbies for all kinds of things against us, and we're paying for all that. That is our money that they're doing all of this with. So make no mistake, they are getting rich off of us every single day.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the money that Kyrsten Sinema has, she's made her campaign millions thanks to the pharmaceutical industry, all in an effort to keep drug prices high. I mean, so she couldn't lower the drug prices. Like, spent that money going after her to make sure that she would be the card-carrying member of the pharmaceutical industry.
Right.
It worked. It worked. And you wonder why people want to move their businesses out of the United States. they want to leave the United States. You know, there's a record number of people leaving the United States. Wonder why? Because unless you're listening to the propaganda on television all the time and you're hearing, oh, America's the greatest country in the world. And
Wall yeah, if you don't think doing amazing,
you don't think America's great, then you should leave. Okay, I will. Show me in which category America's great. You can't find it. Banking? Banking, do you know that America's banks are ranked in the 40th, almost 50th for least safe banks in the world? You know that over 500 banks almost every year go into default and collapse? That doesn't happen in other countries. That doesn't happen in Singapore. That doesn't happen in Austria. Doesn't happen in Switzerland. They have no bank defaults. And so when Americans put their money in a bank and they think that it's safe, these banks literally are doing all kinds of shady loan practices, and America's dollars are at risk. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that people don't even talk about and don't even think about because you're just being spoon-fed all this propaganda all the time.
And, you know, people are always like, you know, could we change this? We really could. If the people would unite, we could peacefully, all we would have to do is peacefully keep our money from them. We would not have to touch them. We would not have to go to Washington. We wouldn't have to leave anything. We would just have to go shop locally and not pay our taxes because, like, think about this.
Wouldn't it be amazing?
It would be. Imagine if we could bypass, like, say, oh, okay, we need a bridge in this city. Let's everybody just donate to the people who can work on the bridge locally and not send it to the government so that they can pay the bureaucrats to argue who gets the contract and all this other stuff. We waste so much money sending it to these people. It's like we gave a teenager unlimited black Amex and said, just go buy whatever you want. And then they come back an hour later and it's like, you bought what? You bought countries, you bought cars, you just completely wasted it. And now you've got like $17 trillion in debt. That was a mistake.
And you want to know, like, when we send a tax check in to the American government, right, where is that money going? That money is not going to help other people. Like, I pay a lot in taxes. If I was sending my tax check in, right, and I knew that tax check was going to help fund, you know, children's education or to build proper highways or to take care of healthcare in the United States, all of that. If I knew that my tax dollars were going to support that infrastructure, maybe I wouldn't feel so reluctant about sending my taxes in. But guess what? Yeah. That money doesn't go to support those things because America has no healthcare. America doesn't take care of its children. America doesn't take care of its elderly. America doesn't take care of lowering prescription drugs for elderly. It doesn't do any of that. Its roads are falling apart. Its bridges are falling apart. So where does that money go? It goes to the military-industrial complex, and it goes to making sure that big businesses and banks are taken care of. That's where the money goes.
Well, and think about this. Like, okay, when you pull out a dollar, every dollar, okay, you got a dollar bill in your hand. Every dollar that you send to the government for taxes, 55 cents of that dollar goes to war.
Right.
55 cents. So could you imagine if you were paying your taxes and you got to check a box? I want my money to go to check Medicaid, check this, and not check war. If they would do that during one cycle, they would see how many people do not support war. And people have no idea that that's how much money is going to the government for war.
Yeah. So in this Build Back Better stimulus, there are some sticking points. And this is why we may not see a vote before Christmas. Senate Democrats remain divided over some key elements in this package, specifically tax breaks for wealthy people. Like, this is the sticking point, the SALT deduction, the state and local tax deduction, and Medicare expansion. The House approved a provision raising the cap on the deduction from $10,000 to $80,000, but then Senator Bernie Sanders and Robert Menendez are trying several different proposals to change the House SALT language, although they don't agree on what to do with the revenue that would bring that they would actually bring in. Republicans, meanwhile, continue to slam Democrats on this issue over the SALT deduction, calling the House initiative a giveaway to blue state millionaires. So again, this was this elimination of the SALT deduction was put in place during the Trump era, and a lot of blue it was seen as like a blue state tax. Basically, you know, if you voted against Trump in any of these blue states, then you were screwed as a result of it. So that's the sticking point. The $1.7 trillion bill right now is still hanging out there. But we're also learning a little bit about some of the hidden provisions in the Build Back Better plan, some of the hidden details in this stimulus. And There's a lot of propaganda around natural gas that you may have been noticing on television. I don't know. I'd love to hear it in the chat. Let me know. Are you watching television and do you see advertisements for natural gas? Like, move to natural gas, the cleaner alternative, the safer alternative, the cheaper alternative. I'm sure you have.
I watch TV. I don't watch TV at all anymore. I don't remember the last time I watched TV.
Well, it's all propaganda. It's all propaganda because natural gas is not cleaner. It's not better for the environment. And the natural gas industry is getting a huge kickback in this Build Back Better plan, buried deeply in here. And the David Poster did a good job on this, like digging.
All you
got
to think about is when you see an ad on TV, a corporation paid to sell you on an idea. That's like that sugar commercial where that farmer is walking around talking about high fructose corn syrup. He's like, hey, sugar, sugar.
Right. Yeah, it's not. It's no, not. It's two different things.
That's paid money to sell you on an idea.
Yeah, I hope all of you watching this show, and you thank you for subscribing to this channel and supporting independent journalism. We do this show every day at 9 a.m. Eastern time. So if you're new to the show, if you have never watched us before, usually Natalie and I do the show together. She's off today. But we cover these stories that you're not going to see in the mainstream media because they are bought and sold by billionaire corporations. So subscribe to the channel. Join us every Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern time covering these stories. But one story I want to talk about is this natural gas inside of the stimulus package, and that is this hidden reconciliation bill clean energy rebate program. So basically, it could tether homeowners' appliances to natural gas forever. The way that it works is, you know, because President Biden has been touting that this Build Back Better is a huge effort to combat climate change, right? It'll be the biggest in American history. However, tucked into the section calling for residential efficiency and electrification rebates is a subtle six-year policy to make $6 billion available to establish the Homeowner Managing Energy Savings Rebate Program. Now, that policy basically is because of lobbying from the natural gas industry. We knew we would start to see like little seedy details in this, right? And this probably, I would bet that it probably has something to do with the likes of Joe Manchin, who we know, of course, is bought and sold by the coal industry, right? So these types of provisions get shoved in here because of the oil and gas industry that lobbies on behalf of, you know, lobbies Congress, spends millions of dollars on their campaigns. Just look at people like Mitch McConnell, who've made millions of dollars off of coal, of the energy companies over the years to fund his campaigns. So according to the White House, the consumer rebates and credit included in the Build Back Better framework will save the average family hundreds of dollars per year in energy costs. But what are eligible? Well, in calculating total energy for a savings of family, it may include savings from the purchase of high-efficiency natural gas HVAC systems and water heaters certified under the Energy Star program.
So let's just completely build our infrastructure for the future, okay? Let's not think of something else. Let's build our infrastructure for the future out of finite resources.
Right. So this is the future. We're going to combat global warming and climate in this bill. And the way to do that is to make sure that you get a rebate for going out and buying a natural gas furnace or hot water heater. And meanwhile, like, if you go to Portugal or you go to other countries in the European Union, you try to get, like, natural gas inside of your home, they're like, they look at you funny because they're like, well, we don't even, there's no natural gas pipelines coming up to your house. Like, no. Like, you'd have to literally get, like, a tank installed in order to do that. And it's incredibly expensive and it's incredibly damaging to the environment. So a lot of people that get those, you know, those fireplaces installed that have natural gas, or just the natural gas fumes that you're breathing in from cooking with natural gas. I mean, I've had natural gas for years until
that's what we have here.
You know, we eliminated it. But it's a lie. And the natural gas industry has been spending millions of dollars bringing in online influencers on Instagram and TikTok and other. They're bringing celebrities in doing, like, they literally have celebrities on Instagram be like, hey, I'm just cooking here on my natural gas stove paid for by the natural gas industry. Jeez. This is the stuff that you have to deal with in the United States.
Well, and think, okay, so I know that this isn't the topic we're talking about, but think about this. Like, remember when that, what was that female rapper Nicki Minaj, mm-hmm. who said that the White House called her because they wanted her to push the vaccines the same way. They wanted her to do stuff for her on her tweets to push the vaccine to people to sell it. That's basically the same thing. And that's what started that whole storm. She's like, no, I'm not doing that. And she told everybody that's what was happening. Wow. And there were a whole bunch of celebrities that took the money and did it. And that's the same thing. Like, whenever they do that, it's a propaganda. Don't make no mistake. This is a propaganda campaign to try to sell us that natural gas is safe and efficient. But it is a finite resource. We have to stop looking at finite resources to fuel everything.
Yeah, I mean, forget the fact that it will kill you, right? And that it is bad for the environment. It's also finite. So if you're going to build America's infrastructure on the backs of finite resources and emissions heavy resources, what are you doing? I mean, you have an opportunity.
It's dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely dangerous. And, you know, again, as Reuters reports, cleaner but not clean. Why scientists say natural gas won't avert climate disaster. Natural gas produces half as much carbon dioxide when burned than coal, but that doesn't make it harmless. Climate scientists say the rising production of natural gas is emerging as one of the biggest drivers of climate change, and that plans for industry expansion could hobble efforts to stabilize the Earth's climate. So, again, this is the thing. When you have the American Petroleum Institute lobbying for oil and gas industry, launching its Energy for Progress campaign that happened earlier this year, where they hired all of these like influencers and, you know, all these social media influencers. I guarantee you, you're probably seeing radio ads or listening to radio ads, watching television about natural gas. You're going to see influencers on Instagram. Hey, I'm just here cooking over my natural gas stove. Oh, yeah, that's a natural gas stove right here. You know, well, it's like product placement in the 1950s.
Unfortunately, people don't know the process too. It's like we're eating these hamburgers, but we have no idea that what happens to those animals before we get it, right? And so think about fracking and stuff. You have people that in these areas where they're fracking that have gas coming out of their water. Like they can light their water on fire out of their sink. So, you know, right. It's a dangerous process to even get natural gas.
Yeah. And so the United States right now, I mean, because of the amount of natural gas we get from fracking, has helped drive a huge reduction in the amount of coal that we've been using. So good on that. But you're like replacing two wrongs don't make a right. You know, that's the bottom line. And so now when you build this into the Build Back Better program, let's just build back better, right? It's supposed to be we're building and we're gonna build back better than we are before. Well, this is not. You're actually now tying people to a diminishing resource that's actually bad for the environment.
Well, no, it's actually accurate. They're building back better slightly.
Backwards. They're building backwards. Yeah. They're building
we're
backwards.
Building back better, like where we were. We're building it back.
We're building it back. We're building back.
We're
gonna
do it slightly better. We're gonna have better equipment in your house to use it on.
What would I replace natural gas with? I would replace it with electricity. I mean, using electric stoves. That's a replacement of it. That's what we use now.
Geothermal. That's what
geothermal.
We need.
Geothermal is the best. Geothermal is the most the most sustainable of all forms of heating and power. Geothermal, not available to everyone, of course, but solar. So we power our electric stove with solar power. And it's clean because we're using solar power. So yes, I know of course the problems with electricity as it relates to coal powering these electricity plants and so on. But you know, we need to move away from these natural resources that are finite and to not have them built into these programs where these people are now being tied to this resource for the rest of their lives because of this energy rebate program. It's brilliant on the part of this industry lobbying Congress. And of course they get it shoved in here and shoehorned in here. Yeah, there you go. We got more news to get to here on the show today. I want to talk about what's happening right now in China. And specifically, you guys need to hear this story because as it relates to American companies that are funneling money to support the human rights abuses in China and sexual abuse at the hands of the Chinese government, an amazing story that we need to talk about that the mainstream media is doing actually a decent job of covering, but they're doing it hypocritically. So we'll talk about that. And a real life Star Wars. Yes, actually a war in space. We'll tell you about that in just a moment. But first, and we're going to get to your pet photos today. So if you've sent in your pet photos, it is Pet Photo Friday. We will get to those. Grover is anticipating all the pet photos. He said, Daddy, I'm ready for those pet photos today. But first, I want to tell you about our good friends over at Harry's. I am a huge fan of Harry's, and, you know, men are notoriously hard to shop for, aren't we? You know, and what if you could just get a beautiful Harry's trial set sent right to your front door in time for the holidays? That's what you need to do. And with Harry's, you can get a meticulously crafted razor. And the razors are cheaper. Look at this compared to like Gillette Pro Shield. $2 compared to $3.70. Isn't it ridiculous how expensive some of those razors are? It's amazing. And their razors are way better. So they have fantastic prices at Harry's. And now is the perfect time to be able to get a Harry's trial set for just $3. That's right. Just pay shipping and handling, and they will set this to you at a ridiculously reduced price. And they, you know, you get a 100% quality guarantee. So if he doesn't love his shave, you will get a full refund on it. Listeners can get $5 off plus free shipping on any Harry's limited edition holiday shave set right now. So not just their free trial on the subscription, you're just going to pay the $3 shipping, but you can check out any of the other amazing limited edition holiday shave sets that they have. The sets come with a weighted handle, 3 razor cartridges, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover. Everything he'll need for a smooth shave, all packaged in a handsome holiday gift box. So to claim yours, you get $5 off plus free shipping. Go to harrys.com/invest. This is the only razor I use, is my Harry's razor. And as I mentioned here on the show quite often, my wife steals it from me on a regular basis. That's because they're so good. It's so good. And their shaving gel is my favorite. And by the way, have you tried their new body wash, David? I use the...
No. Oh, yes, I actually have. You should see my shower. I've got like 4 Harry's things in there. And I use their hair gel.
I haven't tried their hair gel, but I love their new body wash for men. It's fantastic. I got like the Redwood one. It smells good. I smell like a forest. It smells good. Derek in our chat says, I need me some Harry's. Yeah, I mean, look, for just $3 to pay shipping, get it right. It's a perfect stocking stuffer, and it comes in a nice gift box. This is a perfect thing for the men in your life. For a limited time, listeners of my show can get $5 off of any of their holiday shaving sets. Just go to that URL on the screen. It's harrys.com/invest. They are my favorite. They are absolutely my favorite. I was traveling, and I forgot to bring my Harry's razor. And I tried one of the old ones I used to have. Oh my God. I was like, what am I doing? It hurt. I was like, this is ridiculous. Don't do that. Don't do that to yourself. All right. Moving along here on the show today. Have you been following this story out of China? This is a really fascinating and troubling story. Peng Shui is the tennis star out of China who basically came forward and said that she was the victim of sexual abuse, sexual assault by high level member of the Chinese government. And suddenly after this happened, she disappeared. Her tweets and social media mentions of this were removed. Reports, if you're a newscaster inside of China trying to cover this story, the story will go to color bars. They will cut your feed if you try to report on this story. And so this is how, let me sort of set the stage for you here. This is how it was described by the BBC as they announced this and what is actually unfolding. So take a listen to how this unfolded.
Allegations made by the double star Peng Shui against a former vice premier. Courtney Bembridge has the latest.
It's been a month since Peng Shui posted on social media accusing a top Chinese official of sexual assault. The post was quickly taken down and she disappeared from public view. Chinese state media has released a series of videos of her, but there are concerns she was filmed under duress. The Women's Tennis Association says it's still yet to speak to her, and until there's a transparent investigation into the sexual assault claims, it's pulling the plug on lucrative tournaments in China.
Okay, so that's where it sits right now. It was actually pretty amazing that the World Tennis Association came forward when the International Olympic Committee didn't. Okay, you want to talk about somebody having balls. Tennis balls. The World Tennis Association came forward and said, whoa, this is unacceptable. We have billions of dollars that we're doing with the Chinese in different tournaments all throughout China. And we are going to pull the plug on that until there's an investigation into these claims. Where is she? We haven't seen her. She's disappeared. We've gotten some cryptic emails from her that are obviously orchestrated. They're like, the emails that they've received are clearly written by somebody else. These video releases that they're having of her clearly under duress, like someone sitting there in an office filming her, telling her what to say. Creepy, right? So the World Tennis Association amazingly came out and said, we are pulling the plug. We are done. We are pulling the plug. And I have to say, this deserves our attention. This deserves a huge round of applause. This is something that we largely won't see reported in the mainstream media, but I will say that CNN has done a good job, at least in part, in covering the story. So I slam the mainstream media all the time here, but CNN, I will give them credit, and Aaron Burnett's show for actually doing this story and staying on this story. Where is she? She's made these claims against a vice premier of China for forcing her into a hotel room and having sex with her. And this is rampant across China. A few weeks ago, The Economist magazine did a really eye-opening report about China and the way that they treat women specifically, and how the sort of Me Too movement in China, good luck. You bring up any accusations at all, it'll just be squashed. You'll be fired. You'll be pushed away. They really insulate and protect the old boys club in China. So these types of accusations get squashed. You don't stand a chance.
And think about the girl. Like, she knew what could happen to her. So she thought, like, she had to think, like, I can't imagine, like, what it felt like in her gut to actually come out with that information.
Yeah. And I think that the head of the WTA is a hero today. I think what he is doing deserves, everyone should know his name. Okay. I'm going to play some sound of him, basically, what the WTA is now saying in China.
We're not going to walk away from this, and we're not going to allow this to be swept away without the appropriate respect and seriousness of the allegations that have been reflected are appropriately addressed.
So Steve Simon and the WTA now saying, we're done. Like, we're done in China. You guys, you had an opportunity to come out and be transparent and to open this story up so that we can all understand what actually happened here. And instead, the Chinese government are pulling the plug on anyone who's covering the story. They're taking down internet posts. Like, and by the way, on Facebook, on Twitter, on other places, they're just being removed from social media. When reporters are trying to do the story in China, the feed is pushed to color bars. You know, like, I don't know, if I flick my thing off here on, will it go to color bars? Like, if I turn my thing off and...
Yes, it will.
Yeah. If I just turn off external, it'll do that, right?
Yeah. It'll go to the bars. Yep.
Oh, stop external output. Yeah. Let's try that. So, yeah.
Oh. Nope. It goes to the bars for you, not for us. You're just frozen for us.
Okay. There we go. But anyway, so literally, like, the state, they're basically saying, this didn't happen. She's doing fine. Why haven't we heard from her? Where is she? I mean, and by the way, she's an Olympian. Like, this, think about this. It would be like the United States taking Michael Phelps and, like, hiding him somewhere and literally just releasing emails. I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. So anyway, Steve Simon, everyone should know his name. Steve Simon, as the head of the world, the WTA, came forward and said, we are done. And he was on Aaron Burnett's show last night. I want to play that for you because actually her show has done a good job of covering this story.
And now a very big update. Your time. Look, I know this didn't come lightly to you or the WTA. You made it clear you were willing to do it, but you gave them a chance to do the right thing. Why did you decide to do it now?
Well, thanks, Aaron. Thanks for continuing to cover the story and to support the story. I think it was pretty clear as we chatted and shared last time we were together. If the Chinese authorities weren't going to treat these allegations seriously and we weren't able to have direct contact with Peng, we were prepared to pull our business. The statement, I think, reflects that what we said is true. We're planning to suspend our events until such time that the Chinese authorities do the appropriate thing. We're hopeful that they will. We'd like to continue our business in the region. We've had a lot of success and we have a lot of friends and good partners in the region. But as we've also said before, this is about the principles we stand for and the principles of women associated with sexual assault, which trumps everything else.
Now, this what I want to say here is important because great, amazing for the WTA. Now, the International Olympic Committee has not done the same thing. The IOC, look, the games are going to be in Beijing. The Winter Games are set for 2022 in Beijing, which I can't believe they're already coming up on us. But the IOC is standing by. They're standing by, not doing anything. So it took the WTA, the Women's Tennis Association, to show us how to do this the right way. And it basically gave a middle finger to the Olympic Committee. You know, the Olympic Committee is putting money and profits over human rights.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Imagine that. Can you imagine that? That they would actually stand up. So the WTA did what the IOC and the International Olympic Committee should have done but didn't do. Interestingly, there's a lot of business in China as it relates to this, right? And so Erin Burnett, this is an interesting piece on CNN. Watch this, okay? So this is exactly how the media, they're doing a good job covering the story, but then they also screw themselves up and they fail to report a huge piece of this story, which they should have done. So watch Erin Burnett lay this out now.
So you're putting on the line $1 billion and you're doing it because you believe that morals and principles are more important than money. But let me just be clear, of the 15 companies listed as sponsors right now of the Olympic partners for the Beijing Winter Olympics, not a single one has spoken out about Peng. I'm just putting the American companies on the screen. Airbnb, Coke, P&G, Visa, Dow, Intel, none of you have said a word. The NBA has a huge presence in China. We've reached out to them for comment. After you appeared on my program, we got no response. Have any of these organizations reached out to you, spoken to you privately, and said they support you or they're willing to step up, or has it just been total silence?
No, we haven't heard from the partners obviously involved with the Olympics and other properties involved in China. We have heard from our partners, and they've been very supportive of us, of course.
Okay. So these partners, they're not going to pull their funding from from China. All of these big businesses that can make tons of money off of the Olympics in China haven't said a word, keeping their mouths shut, sitting on their hands. And Erin Burnett should have mentioned, but she didn't, that her parent company, Time Warner, invested heavily into China. Time Warner has invested $50 million in China and more. In fact, Time Warner has, the former chief said that increasing our global presence is one of Time Warner's strategic priorities in China, and one of the most attractive territories in which we operate, but it's complex. This alliance will give all our businesses a savvy and accomplished partner in China. No mention of that, right?
Do you happen to know if that new CEO or whatever has started at CNN, the guy that's going to change the CNN back to being news again?
I don't know if he started or not, the new head of news.
I'm just curious. Seeing them cover this story makes me curious because that's a pretty big risk for them.
It is. It is because China will pull the plug. I mean, their presence in China is important and they've got reporters. I mean, they just expanded. They just opened a CNN Portugal bureau. So CNN is like going back to trying to do like straight news. And if that seems to be like covering these types of stories, putting Chris Cuomo, getting him suspended, et cetera, maybe this is a move towards that. I have to say, good on them for covering the story, but it would have been nice to also disclose that your parent company, Time Warner, is also a huge partner with China. That's a big part of that. To me, that's an important part of that story.
Well, I think it is important, but the thing is, like, we can't control, you know, like, who purchases us. It's kind of like these little social media companies that get swallowed up by the big tech giants, right?
Right.
They try to still have their mission. They still try to have their what they do, but they kind of lose control of that through that parent company. So it's like, you know, it's kind of a sins of the father kind of thing, that they shouldn't all be responsible for what the parent company does because it's not their fault they were purchased by them.
Well, someone who can control what he does is Ray Dalio, billionaire Ray Dalio. He's got a new book out, and he does a lot of investing in China. And what Ray Dalio just said is pretty eye-opening, pretty shocking, and is leaving a lot of people scratching their heads. You know, he is a big prognosticator of markets. He has certainly, you know, accurately predicted a number of major setbacks in world economies. And when Ray Dalio speaks, a lot of people listen. I certainly listen to his investing strategies and how he sees cryptocurrency and all of those things. He's a brilliant guy. But he said something that was really head-scratching when he sat down with Andrew Ross Sorkin on CNBC about China. He does a lot of business in China. So when Andrew Ross Sorkin asked him about human rights abuses, this story specifically in China, you're an investor there. Can you put pressure on the Chinese government through your businesses to demand that they do better? And here's what he had to say about this.
Transfer of wealth of sorts.
Well, okay, two things. China, transfer of wealth. I just know China very well. And I come as a perspective, with a perspective as an investor. I've been going there since 1984. I know leaders, and I know how they're thinking, and I know the moves that they're making in a detailed way. And I'm just trying to share what that perspective is, because I think a lot of people make stereotypical moves. And I think you have to really understand, first thing you have to understand, because it has been a remarkably successful place. Since I started going there in 1984, per capita has increased by 26 times. And so,
okay, so are you going to answer the question? I know
China over for dinner a couple times.
I know them. I know them. I know how they think. Well, if you know how they think, then you ought to know exactly like what The Economist reported just a few weeks ago, which is how oppressive that regime is towards stories of sexual abuse and sexual assault. And you bring that up to a boss, you get laughed out of the boardroom. I mean, you bring it up to any kind of human resources, it just gets squashed. Try having a Me Too movement in China. It's not going to happen. So we are literally seeing a moment with this story of our tennis star Peng Shuai. Like if this story, you have international business leaders saying what she is claiming is sexual assault by a vice premier of the Chinese government, you have an opportunity as a billionaire and as a business leader and as someone who does a lot of business in that country to stand up and say enough is enough. I'm going to pull my business here, or I am going to exert pressure on this. I think a lot of big companies who stand for human rights or purport to, like Apple, for instance, right? But there always seems to be erring on the side of profits, just like these businesses who are not speaking out, who stand to make a ton of money from the International Olympics in Beijing. So Dalio was pressed a little bit on this, and he was totally evasive on this whole thing, saying he can't be an expert in these types of things. Really? But you can be an expert and write really thoughtful books, like the book Principles, which is heralded as an incredible business book. Or he's got a new book out just now he's promoting. That's why he was doing this interview that looks at 500 years of world economic history. But you can't be educated about the very country that you do business in all of the time, and you know them very, very well.
It reminds me of that Stephen Wright joke. It's like he walks up to that guy and he's locking the door on a building, and that sign says open 24 hours in a row. Open 24 hours. And the guy's like, why are you locking up? And he's like, well, it's not in a row. It's like, you know, it's like principles, but not all the time.
Yeah, not all the time. So on this area, I'm just, you know, I know them. I have them over for dinner, but I just kind of look the other way because I make a lot of money there. That's how it reads to me. Anyway, here's the rest of that soundbite.
So to not understand it or to approach it with a great bias is a great disservice. Okay. In terms of the element of, a transfer of wealth, or let's call it common prosperity. Yes, there's a world in this world right now. There's a move to common prosperity. I think that move, what does it mean at a technical level? That's not take your money away. But here, I would say what are called progressives here are much more left than what we would call progressives or whatever the Chinese policies are doing. But yes, worldwide, there has to be common prosperity, or let's call it broad prosperity. And the question is whether that's going to come about by productivity or not. It doesn't mean that you're going to have like a communism that's going to take all of that. There's going to be a lot of productivity in China. And so, again, diversifying the portfolio. Right. You look at the United States.
What is he saying? I mean, literally, like, You can tell how you can tell how nervous he is. I don't see him really ever nervous in interviews. Like, he's got his stuff together, and he's just given a word salad. He's like, we're more progressive here than they are there. So, you know, take your money away? I wouldn't say to do that. Okay.
Say, hey, David, did you like that cheeseburger you had? Well, you know, I went and got pizza the other day, and I was thinking that if I just drove my car south on the highway, I would get down to warmer weather. But, you know, I took a right, and I ended up, and it was snowing on the mountain, and I came back home, and the kids were here, and I went and I cleaned my car, and then I took a nap, and I went to bed.
Yeah. Oh, what was my question again? I think I asked you about pizza. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm just taking you down a total. So now it's top up. Well, I don't even know what he's just throwing out a whole bunch of economic terms. We need productivity, top up this, down this, that. No, I asked you about human rights, sexual abuse. Like, you do business there. Like, where do you come down on this issue? And Andrew Ross Sorkin's like, right. Let's see if he presses him on this question.
Elsewhere, yeah, right. Diversify.
One of the quick questions I just want to ask you on China, though, is, clearly, there's human rights issues. There's questions right now about this Chinese tennis player, Peng Shuai. There have been questions about Jack Ma. How do you think about that piece of it when it relates to investing there?
Well, I can't be an expert in those types of things. What I basically...
I know everything about the Chinese people. I've had them over for dinner. Well, I don't know that.
Yeah, read my new book. It's 500 pages of 500 years of world history of economics and economic troubles and why do countries collapse? But I can't be an expert in that. He starts off his soundbite by saying, I've been going to China since 1984. Okay, what more of an expert? If there's an expert on China from the United States who's done business there and who is an investor there, can you tell me who that is? Can you get that guy on the phone? Because to me, you are the guy. Like, you are the Chinese expert who's done business there since the 1980s, 1984 to be exact. But I can't be an expert in this. I don't know. I can't be an expert. I mean, how can I be expected to answer that question?
Now about this Chinese tennis player, Peng Shuai, there have been questions about Jack Ma. How do you think about that piece of it when it relates to investing there?
Well, I can't be an expert in those types of things. What I basically do, and I'm for 50 years, I invest all over the world. I look to whatever the rules are. If the government has a policy that I should do a certain thing and so on, but I can't be an expert in all of those particular dynamics of that. I really have no idea.
I shoes off when I go in my friends' houses there.
And I know that they, you know, I know that they don't call it Chinese food. They call it food because they don't eat Chinese food. They just eat food.
I just sit there in my socks. I eat their food with these sticks.
They have, and I know I like the movie The Karate Kid. But I don't know. I can't be an expert in this. And all I got to say is whatever their rules are, I just follow their rules. Okay. So their rules are that they ignore women's complaints of sexual abuse and sexual assault. And you're okay with that. Like, that's something that's
like,
you're okay
it's
with.
It's like Cuomo. I'm Italian. I kiss everybody. I hug everybody.
It's what I do. I just, what you know, I'm Governor Cuomo. I just grope people. What's wrong with that? You got a problem with that?
He's the prime minister. They touch people. What are you going to do?
I can't. You know, I just treat... I'm just like a parent. I'm just like an old parent. You know, I can't deal with these crazy kids.
Government is, you know, the most important thing. It's these are political... It's like... And then I look at the United States and I say, well, what's going on in the United States? And should I not invest in the United States because other things and our own human rights issues or other things? You know, and I'm not trying to make political comparisons. I'm basically just...
You're not making any comparisons.
Rules, understand what's going on and invest properly
Ray, you recognize, I think that what's going on in the United States, and there are things that happen in the United States that I don't agree with, that I imagine you don't agree with, but I think that those things are different than some of the things we see happening in China. People aren't... the government isn't disappearing people, for example.
Okay. Look, you want to get into the policy of disappearing people. I'll give a little bit of a perspective of that, okay? What they have is an autocratic system. One of the leaders described it. He said the United States is a country of individuals and individualism. And that's what it's about. He said in China, it's an extension of the family. He said, if you look at the word country in China, it consists of two characters, state, family. And that has to do with Confucian. And it's very much a top down. And as a top down country, what they're doing is that it's that kind of like a strict parent. They behave like a strict parent.
Oh, okay. So the sexual abuse, it's just like a strict parent. I get it, Ray. Okay. You're making brilliant sense. You have a friend who told you that this is how they operate there. They just, you know, when they have these sexual abuse stories, it's just a strict parent being tough on the child. That's all it is. So look the other way. He's rolling his eyes at Andrew's question, and good for Andrew for pressing him on this. You know, saying, "Look, this is different. People are disappearing. The government is, and you're continuing to do business there, and you're you have the power to exert some pressure on this government to change." Right?
You think he'll be back on that show?
I don't know. He's like, "Oh, I usually come on these business shows and get softball questions. You know, that's why I come here." You know, because I mean, he just did an interview with Andrew Ross Sorkin like a few months ago at some conference, and it was just, you know, a bunch of softball business questions. There wasn't really, you know, and so now to be pressed on this issue, and he's like, "Oh, come on. Oh, you want to talk about disappearance of people? Oh, I didn't know I was going to be talking about that today. I thought I was here just promoting my book, how brilliant I am." Look, at the end of the day, you're selling a book and telling everyone how brilliant you are, right? It's a book about 500 years of economic history and why countries collapse. And then when asked about the sexual abuse in China, you roll your eyes and say, "I can't know these things. I can't be educated on these things." So you're selectively being educated on things that matter, I suppose.
It's anyway. Like it's China. It's the China. She's a woman. You know how they are with women. Like,
right.
Who cares?
Just, who cares? It's, who cares?
When I'm in China, I do what China does.
Yeah. And yes, I know Mr. Miyagi's from Japan. I was making a joke about his limited knowledge of China. Someone in the chat
He's
says
from Okinawa.
Okinawa. Yeah. Yeah, which is a small... Is Okinawa, it's actually considered part of Japan. I know it's an
island. Yeah, it's an island off of Japan.
It's an island off of Japan. By the way, Okinawa has... there's an amazing book I read years ago on Okinawa called The Okinawa Diet Plan. It has more centenarians that live in Okinawa than anywhere in the world. People that live to be over 100 years old. Like no cancer, no heart disease. It's because their diet and just their lifestyle. They treat elders with such respect. They don't cast them off into nursing homes. It's a really fascinating book. About Okinawa.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah,
I actually took Okinawan Shorinryu as the kind of type of karate that I took when I was a teen.
Wow, Grim says he was born in Okinawa. I studied Okinawan Kenpo, so that was my.
We should fight sometime.
Yeah, we should. but my Kenpo won't work with your style, so it'll just be a lot of me going this way and you going that way.
Yeah, and then we'll just sit down and listen to records.
Exactly. Like, okay, we're done. Let's just listen to some Beatles records. So that's my update on China. That's my update on Ray Dalio. Just a really eye-opening, troubling interview. Like a guy that I held up in such high regard. Really, this deflated me watching this interview. I must say, really, really bothered by this. And this is exactly, I think, what's wrong when people think about big business. Just turning a blind eye to profits, turning a blind eye to problems so they can continue to make profits. I don't need to see about that or educate myself about that. I'm making money over here.
If you want to see it in a way that really like makes you think and kind of touches more home than something with China, watch Dope Sick. Because Dope Sick, that movie with Michael Keaton, really shows you the measures that these corporations will take to get a profit. It's like, oh, people are getting having issues or whatever. Well, let's up the dose. Let's make a bigger pill. Oh, now they said we've been approved by the FDA to give it to people indefinitely. That means we're going to make lots of money, guys. Congratulations. You're now the president of this company because you're going to make us so much profits. And it's like, you just see in real time how these people think about the bottom line, and they do not think about, because they knew that this was killing people. They knew all this stuff was happening, and they did it anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, and they hope they don't get caught, right?
Yeah.
That's what happens. And
when they did, nobody went to jail.
Right. They'll continue to pollute. These big companies will continue to pollute riverways because they know that government's in their pocket, and they won't prosecute them. It's just the way this stuff works. So we've got more news to get to. I want to talk about this Star Wars story. Let's talk about Star Wars. And not the kind of Star Wars that I love and that David loves and that Grover loves. No, Star Wars in actual outer space, actual Earth. And we knew, and I hate to say that I predicted this was going to happen. There could be an actual Star War brewing right now. A very quiet one, though, that we're hearing a little bit about, but we have no proof of, right? We're on Earth, so how do we know that China and Russia are destroying our satellites? Well, we don't, right? Well, I don't have any proof of that. Chewie might, but I don't. And so the United States government is basically saying, we have now a serious threat in outer space, a serious threat. These threats are, in fact, I'll quote, the threats are really growing and expanding every single day. And it's really an evolution of activity that's been happening for a long time. David Thompson, Vice Chief of Space Operations at the Space Force, had to say.
Jeez. Oh,
we're really at a point, he says, that now there's a whole host of ways that our space systems can be threatened. Okay, so we just got out of Afghanistan, right? We're trying to end a war there. We're still in like 9 or 10 other countries at war right now. We just increased our defense budget by spending an additional $45 billion on top of the $720 or so billion dollars we've already been spending. Donald Trump thinks, how can we actually throw more money at defense contracts? How can we do it? I'll create Space Force.
Well, you know, an
international force for good.
There was a guy, and he's like, okay, the American people, you guys, they're getting tired of these wars, right? Everybody's voting against them. They don't want us over there. We're going to be pulling out of Afghanistan. We're going to be pulling out of these other places because the American people are sick of it, and they're seeing what's going on because there's too many cameras around now. But guess what? You know where they can't have cameras? You know where we can do everything we want to do, and they'll have no idea?
Space.
Let's do it.
Let's go to space. So you can't tell. You can't tell anything that's going on up there.
Yeah, how would we know?
How do we know that they're literally blowing up satellites, right? So we've been hearing these stories over the past few weeks about Russia attacking our satellites. Okay,
yeah,
so
my XM radio still works. Like, what the heck?
Yeah, my Sirius XM radio is fine. By the way, maybe some of these satellites should be destroyed. I mean, they, you know, who knows what they're doing up there anyway. Am I going to cry about it if U.S. spy satellites are destroyed by Russians so they can't spy on us anymore? You know, maybe they can zoom in on my hand or whatever. Anyway, details are sparse because everything is secret, according to this report. But China and Russia, according to this report, are apparently attacking U.S. satellites every single day. Did you hear that? They're attacking our satellites every single day, according to the Vice President of Space Operations for the United States. You guys should be very scared. You guys should be terrified.
What is it, like one guy going satellite to satellite with a screwdriver?
Right. It's just one guy floating up in space with a helmet on, and he flies and he grabs onto the next one, and he like...
Yeah, are they trying to actually convince us that they have like F-16s up there and flying...
I mean, it's amazing. And so, again, I love the details are sparse. But China and Russia are apparently attacking U.S. satellites right now, every single day. And we right now, you know, this is the thing, is that the Vice President of Space Operations says that this is reversible. We can stop this. Are you guys scared? Are you guys scared here at home? We need to probably throw more money at this problem, right? So as former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Space Policy, Douglas Lavero said, quote, it's really difficult to go ahead and justify how you might attack somebody's homeland if they've taken out a satellite that you don't even admit exists. Oh, I see. So here's their big conundrum right now. This is the Pentagon's big conundrum. We haven't admitted that this satellite exists because it's a secret satellite, but it just got attacked by Russia, but we can't admit to the American people that they attacked our satellite because we never told them it existed. Now, if we want to retaliate and go attack their homeland, we can't justify it because we never told you about the thing they just struck. So now it would look like we're just going to attack Russia without provocation. Like, this is their conundrum, and China too.
Wow.
Like, folks, this is happening right in front of our eyes, and you're seeing these stories. Where do these stories come from? If we don't know that these satellites exist, then why are they telling the press? Why are we getting these leaked stories from the Pentagon about these secret spy satellites? So the United States right now is basically looking for ways to justify how we can retaliate and attack China in some way, how we can attack Russia in some way.
We don't want a satellite to fall in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Right. So we'd rather do it out there. We'd rather have a space battle. And by the way, we need to beef up our space force because this is going to be an interstellar problem now. We need to spend billions more and support space force.
Don't you, Clayton, don't be ridiculous, man. It's space. It's going to be trillions of dollars. You can't fight space with billions.
Right, yeah.
You know, we can't. Space is infinite, man.
And how are we going to protect our moon base? And how are we going to protect our Mars base? This is a brilliant strategy by government officials. You know?
Although I will say, if anybody wants to make some money, I am starting a product called Home Dome, and it's going to be a dome layer that goes over your house to protect you from space shrapnel. So if anybody wants to invest,
Home Dome.
DM me.
Home Dome. It's not very strong. It's like a canvas tent right now. But as you know, you go through different investments, it'll get stronger. It might be move up to Kevlar.
Well, when it senses a force coming through the ozone layer, mm-hmm. it gets harder.
Yeah. Okay. Chrome Dome.
It's force sensitive.
I mean, guys, this is, you know, you've heard me on this show. If you're new to the show, let me know in the chat. Let me know if you're new here. All you need to do is subscribe to the channel. I've railed against our massive defense budget here on the channel for years. I think it's a travesty that we spend $750 billion a year pretending that it's keeping you safe when Americans are suffering every day. It's not doing anything to keep you safe when we bomb other countries indiscriminately, set up military bases around the world. We're in wars that we don't even know about. We found out a few weeks ago that we're secretly in Taiwan, we're secretly in Somalia, we're secretly in Yemen. We moved all of our Afghanistan bases into the other parts of the Middle East. We didn't end that war. We just repositioned stuff and we increase our military spending. And yet we can't even get a freaking stimulus check to the American people to help them. And yet now the threat is in space. So now we need to increase our spending to make sure that Space Force is as strong as possible.
Well, and how much you want to bet they're going to come out in a year and they're going to be like, so we didn't want to let anybody know, but just so you guys know, we've got a base on the moon. We got a military base on the moon. There's probably one there already.
There is. I mean, there is plenty of people that have been a part of the secret space program. Corey Good, for one. There's been a number of people who've spoken openly about what's on the moon. Buzz Aldrin has spoken openly about structures on Mars, actual physical structures on Mars. So, and all of this stuff that's going on in Antarctica right now and secret bases in Antarctica. I know I sound crazy about it, but once you start actually listening to the people that have worked in the government and who have spoken on the record about this, it's not me saying it, it's them saying it. So I wouldn't be surprised if we find out soon we're going to need like a time travel force. We'll just, you know, we're going to have to fund that now. You know, we got space, and now we need a force that's going to go back in time to stop Hitler.
Yeah, now we got to go back and stop the Russians from ever existing so that we don't have to fight them in the Space Force now.
Right. Yeah, we can't stop them now, so we got to go back in time. We need a time force. Time
cops.
And
we're going to send Michael J. Fox because he won't have Parkinson's then, so we can cure him. Everybody would be happy. Michael J. Fox comes back without Parkinson's, and space will be safe.
Space Force. An interstellar war for good.
Interstellar force for good.
So if your satellites stop working, you'll know why. It's the Chinese. They're attacking us now. We need to go to space and stop them.
Yep,
we got
so
more news.
Everybody do us a favor and leave your satellite radios on 24/7. And if you have any interruption, please let us know.
Exactly. Yeah, Jonathan Stewart says, stop the dinosaurs. Yeah, we should go back and stop the dinosaurs. Exactly. That's exactly what we need. We've got more news to get to here on the show today. We've got a busy show on this Friday. I'm not lazy. I put together a good show for you. So stick around because I've got a big story on lockdowns and the coming lockdowns that we're seeing around COVID and why this is soul crushing, really crushing the poor and middle class more than anybody else. We'll get to that story and a new book that's out on that. Plus, we have your pet photos coming up in a few moments. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Crowd Health. You know, the American health system is totally broken. I don't know if you know that, but it is. It's one of the worst in the world, despite the propaganda. And that's why Crowd Health is here to help save us. When it comes to healthcare, it's important to make sure you're getting your money's worth. CrowdHealth offers a more flexible and affordable healthcare option without the hassle of insurance. So while you're shopping around, don't forget to head to joincrowdhealth.com/invest. /99. Joincrowdhealth.com/99, and you want to enter the code INVEST at sign up. What CrowdHealth does is it's a modern way to pay medical expenses. So it's a community of people who are tired of paying into a broken system. When you're inside the CrowdHealth community, it can help you save hundreds of dollars a month and put thousands of dollars back in your pocket. Membership is a monthly subscription, so you can start or stop when it's convenient for you. It's simple and transparent. They have customized structure to fit your needs. They lower your monthly healthcare costs, and you can see any doctor that you want. And all, it's so simple. Just to use their app, you can find any doctor in the country with a quality ranking score. You can scan your medical bills, throw them away. CrowdHealth takes it from there. Press a button to receive a virtual care anytime, anywhere. And CrowdHealth gets rid of the insurance middleman and passes the savings on to its members. So CrowdHealth is able to offer amazing prices because of its community of health-conscious members. And they have an amazing offer just for my listeners. Get your first 6 months for just $99 per month. That's it. That's a savings of almost 50% off their standard pricing and a lot less than one of those crappy high-deductible plans. Just go to joincrowdhealth.com/99. And enter the code INVEST at sign up. That's joincrowdhealth.com/99. Promo code INVEST. CrowdHealth is not health insurance. It's a community-powered alternative. Terms and conditions apply. So our thanks to CrowdHealth for their support of the show. And they do amazing, amazing work. So our
thanks. You just interviewed the CEO.
Exactly.
Yesterday.
Yeah. And I mean, it was amazing to hear how they, you know, how they, I mean, you know, how they structure everything so that you can actually save tons of money. And, you know, he was just so upset about the broken healthcare system that that's how he decided to take things to the next level and create this company. And it's, you know, this is what we have to do in the United States because of what we have. The United States has the, you know, really awful healthcare system. Really, really bad. And this is a great way to save a lot of money and not be screwed over by those high deductible plans. So our thanks to them. Great stuff. And check out my interview with Andy Schoonover. He's the CEO. Really interesting. All right. Let's talk about these lockdowns and COVID. There's a new round of lockdowns coming around the world. Overnight, Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, leaving. Officially gone now. They held that big ceremony saying goodbye to her. But as she was leaving, she was basically saying new vaccine mandates in place and new lockdowns coming. Lockdowns for the unvaccinated and mandatory vaccines. The same thing is happening in Austria. Lockdowns, mandatory vaccines. This is popping up around the world. And of course, there's debates inside the United States right now about mandatory vaccines, even when we're still wondering about the efficacy of all of these things, booster shots, et cetera, and the focus on Delta and Omicron. We now know from South Africa, they've been very open about their data, and the Omicron variant that's been emerging out of South Africa has been very mild. There's been almost no, you know, people going to the hospital on oxygen or anything like that. They've been able to recover pretty quickly. But a new report...
Yeah, I was just going to say real quick, have they even told us what the goal is? What's the end goal? Like, have they said, is it herd immunity? Is it COVID zero? Like, how come there's no like light at the end of like, this is why we're doing this.
I don't know.
The only thing we've heard is just to get everybody vaccinated, period.
Well, and that could, you know, again, that could be the goal, right? Is mass vaccination. And you may argue, okay, well, you know, is there significant data to show that that's stopping the spread? Is it lessening hospital visits and time? Perhaps. Is it keeping people from dying? Perhaps. What about the other side of the data? You know, from these VAERS reports, the VAERS system, like, you know, trouble with these vaccines, you know, all of this. So we don't know, right? The bottom line is this data is still being kept in large part from a lot of people.
But even if the goal is to get everybody vaccinated, they're not giving us the end goal of what that accomplishes. What you're trying to accomplish, where does that get us with this?
Right. Well, and you know, we know that these lockdowns paralyze the world. So the point that I'm making here is that it seemed like, oh, maybe these lockdowns might have been a good idea at the time. We now know, according to this new book. It's a really interesting book. I just ordered it. Let me see where the name of the book is. The COVID Consensus. Let me pull it here up on the screen. The COVID Consensus by Toby Green. The Politics of Global Inequality. And the Gray Zone did a really good job of going through and talking about what we now know from these global lockdowns and how COVID lockdowns obliterated human rights and crushed the most vulnerable among us. So are we heading to that again? And what are we doing? Are we flattening the curve? Or are we really basically squeezing out the global poor and pushing, you know, it was supposed to be marketed as life-saving public health measures, right? Lockdowns, well, instead triggered death and economic devastation on a global scale while doing little to slow the spread of COVID-19. And now they're back. From Australia to New Zealand, Singapore, you know, this idea of going to COVID zero wasn't going to work. It was never going to work. Now, Austria's government announcing plans it would follow and enforce a lockdown exclusively against unvaccinated people. Following days of massive protests there, the policy was extended to everyone, with steep fines and even prison sentences to be imposed on those who refused to comply. Next door in Germany, where a new lockdown was announced this December for unvaccinated people, it barred them from all public places. But Berlin is also weighing a vaccination mandate for everyone, and says that one German constitutional lawyer has even proposed that refusers of the jab be brought before the vaccinator by the police. We're going to drag you in front of the vaccinator. I mean, it sounds like something out of a science fiction movie.
Look at this parallel. This is dangerous, and I know a lot of people say don't make this parallel, but it's true. The unvaccinated are starting to become like the Jews in Germany.
Well, that's the concern in Germany. That's why you're having protests, and that's literally. Well, I was in Austria as this was happening. And so this is not hyperbole. I was seeing the Austrian press. I was seeing Austrian protests calling it the Gestapo. So this is not me saying this. This is Austrian and German people saying this. They know what the Gestapo looks like, going door to door. We're going to drag you in front of the vaccinator.
Well, and that's the reason they say that they still teach about that in schools, is so that they don't repeat that history. But like, you're getting ready to repeat it.
Yes. And here are protests, you know, in Germany, as they're beating people who are refusing to get vaccinated. I mean, tell me that this police kneeing and slamming these people down on a snowy street, kicking this guy in the head. Look at this. This is happening, folks. This is happening, folks. Right before our eyes. I mean, look at that. Let's get the vaccinator out here. Like, let's get him. He's held down now. Let's vax him. You know? I'm the vaccinator. Folks, it's happening right before our eyes. And so this idea, the public health justification for these lockdowns, for these non-pharmaceutical interventions, has been discredited now. Right? We knew that all of the scientific studies around lockdowns had been totally bunk. They caused more deaths than they prevented. So you're going to put an airborne disease in lockdown mode inside of rooms where everyone's now breathing recirculated air. The lethal impact of the lockdowns was particularly pernicious in the global south, where hundreds of millions of the world's most vulnerable people were driven into a cascading humanitarian crisis. As the World Food Program warned in 2020, 135 million people on Earth are marching towards the brink of starvation as a result of their economy shutting down to supposedly inhibit the spread of COVID-19. So in his book, the African history, a professor of African history at King's College, Toby Green, chronicles the misery, the migration, the outflow, and the mass death spawned by lockdowns imposed on populations from Africa to Latin America. And what he says is interesting. He said, lockdowns were not a policy that made any sense in societies where many people live largely outside. And SARS-CoV-2 is a virus that circulates inside. Moreover, they made no sense in regions such as Africa, where the population is much younger than in rich countries. They merely saw a massive shift of health burden from the global rich to the global young and the poor. And he said, and they go on to say, for most people on the planet, the economic and psychological harm experienced during the past 19 months was not the result of the pandemic per se, but of emergency order restrictions that governments imposed on them and justified as public health measures. In the global north, such costly efforts did little more than delay the inevitable spread of COVID-19, while transferring wealth into the hands of big tech oligarchs who constitute the pandemic's real winners. So,
well, I think people forget that the CARES Act, remember the very first bill that was passed when this all happened, the CARES Act, that was the one of the largest transfers of wealth in history. And that was at the beginning. That was $5 trillion went to big corporations. Mm-hmm. And we got, what, $1,200, I think, that first round?
Right, and shut up about it, you know?
And shut up, yep.
Just keep your, just take your $1,200 and shut up.
Yep,
don't worry that your business, don't worry that your business collapsed. Don't worry that you lost your job.
But it was called the CARES Act.
The CARES Act. And we created more billionaires during the pandemic than at any point in world history. Are you seeing this, folks?
And put it in more perspective, there were 9 new billionaires created out of our money. We were stimulating them when they weren't stimulating us. We've been stimulating them the entire time.
Do you feel stimulated?
No.
I wish I was stimulated, but I don't. I don't feel stimulated. The discussion of inevitable harm of lockdowns has almost been totally forbidden, he writes, by most of the mainstream media and academia, while the left followed the lead of the Democratic Party, doing all it could to marginalize any discussion of the collateral damage of these lockdown measures. Any questioning of lockdown measures was cast as right-wing fascism. But mostly the left just ignored the emerging facts, particularly regarding the carnage caused in the global South. And now, I mean, you know, it's amazing. See, lockdowns provided this idea, this sort of like illusion of control over a virus. And we know that it's not the case. In fact, as he points out, that much of the evidence that people have developed to argue that lockdowns work came from modeling studies that have proved incredibly inaccurate. So now we're talking about more lockdowns, more mandates, close the doors, make sure that businesses are closed, consolidating power once again in the hands of these oligarchs and elites.
And if they saw what happened the first time they did this, they wouldn't do it again. They wouldn't repeat history. But they're like, but wait a minute, we got insanely rich. We can get into this. Omicron variant is going to make us insanely rich again, guys. So let's do it. Let's start getting everybody scared.
Yeah, let's get people scared again. And a big thing started, I don't know if you remember this, the Neil Ferguson speech at King's College. Was it King's College? In UK, Grover doesn't like this either. What's up, man? Neil Ferguson in the UK introduced this model about lockdowns when he was in the UK back in 2020, March of 2020. And he said 500,000 citizens would die of COVID-19 that year if it only took moderate steps to restrict public life. And even Boris Johnson said 260,000 would die. So basically, they need to have harsh lockdowns. Otherwise, we are going to see 500,000 people die. In either case, Ferguson insisted, the national healthcare system would be overwhelmed and the economy irreparably damaged. And within a week, Johnson's government accepted his model and locked down hard. Around the same time, the Trump White House received a paper from Ferguson that also envisioned a catastrophic death toll. His model predicted fatalities at a 25% higher rate than the CDC's already stark projection, 2.2 million dead in the first year, unless the U.S. instituted lockdowns. But it did have, you know, it inspired harsh lockdowns. It ultimately brought him public embarrassment because he was caught breaking quarantine he personally inspired to go out with a married woman, like, right? Then at the time, and also his prediction was off. And that his models had totally exaggerated the fatality rate by a factor of at least 4. So this is what the world was basing it on, this guy. In these economies where people live indoors in colder climates, but the entire geographic South, who mostly live outside, who are younger, ended up getting squashed as a result of this.
Has anybody tracked the North Pole? Did Eskimos even deal with this at all?
What about the penguins?
I know it didn't. I didn't hit any penguins.
The problem, you know, when people think about why, what this did to poor people in the middle class, as lockdowns drove inequality in the United States, millions of people just skipped out on routine medical care, such as childhood vaccinations, cancer screenings, and they, because basically hospitals clamped down on non-essential and elective procedures. So we had all these hospitals that were sort of forced into this crazy lockdown mode, and it hurt poor people and middle class, lower middle class individuals more than anybody else. Because do you think the rich had to deal with it? Like, if the rich had a problem, they got medical care. They were able to get a private doctor and get something taken care of.
Well, and when you hear that 200,000 small businesses went under, those are middle class people. Those are not rich people. Those were not like these big corporations. These were our everyday, you know, in the streets, our neighbors that lost their businesses, their restaurants, their lawn mowing company, all of this stuff during this because they couldn't get any help. But yet the elite got rich, 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 rich.
And I think this is, this sums it up, and I'll bottom line it with this, and we'll get on to your pet photos for today. But this is where I think it really hit home for me in this piece. Due to the CDC's recommendations, 1.4 million medical workers lost their jobs. One medical record company estimated that screening for breast, colorectal, and cervical cancers dropped by 80% to 90% compared to the same months in 2019. Now the U.S. is struggling with a surge of cancers and other ailments that went undetected because of overzealous and overly broad lockdowns. While average Americans paid a heavy price for the restrictions, big tech oligarchs quickly emerged as the pandemic's winners. In 2020, billionaires increased their wealth by 54%. In fact, the top 1% of U.S. households now officially control more money than the entire middle class or the middle 60% of households by income in the United States. Read this book, guys. Read this book, The COVID Consensus, The New Politics of Global Inequality by Toby Green. I'd love to have him on the show. If he's watching it, Toby, call my team. I would love to have you on. And I have to say, you know, you see what happens here in Australia. I don't know if you saw what's going on in Australia. I mean, the lockdown
is crazy right now.
I mean, you see what's happening in Australia. They're literally arresting three people who, I mean, they've set up basically concentration camps. That's basically what they are, concentration camps.
Somebody where said there was one of those here, a COVID camp here in Washington. I've not started looking into it yet, but somebody in chat said that yesterday.
So Australian police arrested three people who escaped from the Howard Springs quarantine camp. All three tested negative for COVID on Tuesday, and now they've been arrested and taken into custody. I mean, this is what's happening in Australia. Unbelievable. And by the way, this is exactly how it was portrayed in the Australian press. Like the Australian press, they're like laughing through this, by the way. Watch this report from these two white ladies laughing through this quarantine concentration camp.
Good morning. We start with breaking news at Darwin, where three people have escaped from the Howard Springs COVID quarantine facility. Talia Sav is there for us. Talia, good morning. There's a search underway right now.
Yes, that's right, Davina. Good morning to you. We've been told the trio scaled the fence in the early hours of this morning. Police receiving reports around 4:40 a.m. Now, major police checkpoints have been set up around Howard Springs for the past several hours. As you can see in these pictures, they've been conducting thorough searches in car boots, checking vehicle registrations, cars and buses alike. But in the last half an hour, what we understand is they've actually been dismantled. Exactly why, that hasn't been confirmed.
Look at this.
Hopefully good news. We're also not sure yet who these people are connected with, whether it's a repatriation flight or those Aboriginal community members who have...
Oh yeah, maybe it's just Aborigines. Maybe it's those Aborigines that...
Is that guy looking for COVID in their trunk?
Yeah, he's looking for people that are stowaways, people that might have been, you know, unvaccinated. By the way, these people tested negative. They've tested negative and they're being locked in quarantine camps. So they tested negative and they're like, get me out of here. What are you doing to me? So, I mean, this is literally, and so I'm glad, and then they found them, they rearrested them. Relieved for all of Australia, Max Blumenthal tweets, that these dangerous COVID-negative fugitives are back behind camp walls. And thank this is goodness. What's happening.
Thank you, Max, for your hard work.
Well, Max, of course, is calling out the ridiculousness of this, you know.
Yeah, I love Max Blumenthal. He's one of my favorites.
I mean, it's just amazing. Like, this is what's happening. Concentration camps, and that's exactly what they are. I mean, and exactly, as Lisa Pettit says in the chat, you can't even write this stuff. But we're, you know, if so, we're putting people into quarantine camps now. You can call it whatever you want. But I just love her, like, smiling. She's like, yeah, that's right. You know, that's right. That's right. Smiling through this whole report, like.
You know, I wonder if it would put it into perspective if you tell people just like anytime you refer to unvaccinated, let's just start calling them Jews, because then maybe your head will get wrapped around what is going on.
Yeah. Anyway, this is what I don't know. It's amazing. But yeah, this is the New World Order again. So read this book. Read this book, guys. You know, COVID consensus. What happens when we put these people in lockdowns, the world lockdowns, and who gets rich off of it? The rich, the wealthy make money, and the poor and the middle class get squashed. All right. Hey, if you're into paranormal news, if you like scary stories, stories of the unexplained, I'm a huge paranormal fan. I host a whole other show called The Paranormal Post. It's over on youtube.com/paranormalpost, and I released a new video on this pretty crazy story about this black phantom called the Black Flash of Provincetown, which had been spooking the people there for a long time, and a really creepy story. A lot of you loved it. A lot of you watched it last night, but if you've missed it, right now, it only has 579 views. You got to go over and watch it right now. Go to youtube.com/paranormalpost.
I didn't even know that was posted. You got to let me know these things.
Yeah, go watch it right now. Can we post it on our social feed?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Always let me know that you post them, and I'll get those out. That's all right.
Yeah, we got to go over everyone and watch it right now. youtube.com/paranormalpost and subscribe. Check it out. We're ramping up a lot of content over there. And thanks to Grimm for making the new thumbnails. They look great. So, but yeah, it's a pretty creepy story. Go check it out. All right, everyone. And David, where can people find you, my friend?
Yes, I am over at youtube.com/overlandgeeks. I'm actually live today at 1:00 p.m. Pacific. And I am single, ladies.
Single and ready to mingle.
Yes, single and ready to mingle.
All right, everyone. That's going to do it for Morning Invest. Thanks for suffering through the Guys Club today while Natalie is on a little vacation break. We'll have content for you this weekend. And don't forget to check out that Paranormal Post video. Be safe, everyone. And thanks for subscribing. We'll see you back here on Monday, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Peace.
Peace.